You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
We interrupt this episode for a shameless self-promotion. Everyone's a hero in January, but when it comes to February and beyond, not so much. If you want to be one of the few who punch the entirety of 2024 in its smirking face, then do it with Power Athlete. With an annual subscription, you'll get 365 days of performance-oriented programming delivered to your phone. It's like having a world-class coach, aka me, John Wellborn, in your pocket for less than a dollar a day. When you compare it to the month-to-month package, you're scoring a whole 2 months for free. And because I'm feeling extra generous this holiday season, everyone who signs up for a year before January 31st gets a training consult with me and my team worth hundreds of big ones for free. All you have to do is sign up over at powerathletehq.com/training. Don't be a just for January athlete. Commit to the cause with Power Athlete and crush 2024 like you hit it with a hammer. Remember, I'll say it again. That's powerathletehq.com/training. Now back to the episode. Hey, Power Athlete Nation, I want you to buckle up. We got a powerful podcast coming at you with my good friend, Mike Cirelli. Mike is a retired U.S. Navy SEAL who earned an MBA from the McCombs Business School here in Austin, Texas. He's not only a successful entrepreneur, but he's also the co-host of the Everyday Warrior podcast, which I end up moonlighting on occasion with Dr. Kirk Parsley. He teaches leadership and human performance and has an amazing book called The Talent War, How Special Operations and Great Organizations Win with Talent. We are also taking an adventure down to Costa Rica with Rhythmia, so we're going to talk about that and some of the things that we have coming up in 2024 with the Everyday Warrior. Mike has done Legacy Foundations and had an amazing deal where they jumped into 7 countries in 7 days with Andy Stumpf, and has some pretty cool stories. So buckle up for a good one, Mr. Mike Cirelli. All right, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm joined by Power Athlete alum, Mr. Mike Cirelli, and we're going to rap about some cool shit we have coming up in 2024. But before we do that, I wanted to do a little reboot of 2023, talk legacy, some of the jumps you just did in Moab, the 7 countries, and then also, you know, our Everyday Warrior podcast and some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, where's this tomahawk steak?
Styles and Switch.
Styles and Switch.
Yeah.
We're going there after.
Yes.
Okay.
So they do a deal called the 12 Days of Meat. And every day they do like a special meat thing. This just happens to be their tomahawk ribeye day, which in Power Athlete is a national holiday. So we're going to pick the kids up. I got cash coming. Matt's going to bring his little boy.
Great.
And we're going to go get these tomahawk
ribeyes. I don't think I've ever had a tomahawk midday. So this would be a first.
So you've never had like 36 ounces of tomahawk meat at like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday?
It's usually a night activity. Good. No, man, it's 2023 is, it's been both a good year and a bad year. 18 months of planning starting in 2021 through 2022 to prepare for this 777 expedition. The 777 or 777 within skydiving has sort of been like lore, like it can never be done. Jumping into all 7 continents skydiving in 7 days. I mean, even certain crown princes in the Middle East had stood up a team to plan it and do it, and no one pulled it off. So a bunch of poor vets said, hey, fuck it. Let's give it a shot. Andy Stumpf was involved. Nick Cush was involved. Fred Williams from Complete Parachute Solutions, which are the guys that train military in free fall, as well as they're the vendor that outfits them with the actual parachutes, and they do a lot of testing and development to escalate the capability of a military. So Fred's a former JSOC SEAL as well. And then we had a crew of a sprinkling of soft guys. But the planning, one, I had to raise $1.5 million, which I suck at raising money. But we got good American companies on board that wanted to support. They're like, this is a cool idea.
You mean
idea.
You just didn't go in and find it in your couch? Were like digging around your couch. You just found an extra million.
Yeah, check the bank account. And, it wasn't going to happen. But, dude, the planning and preparation was awful. Like, I was waking up in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. like, oh, we're going to fail. And my wife would have to be like, you've got this. Calm down. Just stay the course. And January, we launched, went to Antarctica. 6 days in Antarctica before we could jump. and we had the...
Was Antarctica the first stop?
It was. And I'll go through the course.
So when you jumped in, you get to Antarctica. When you jumped in Antarctica, did you see the pyramids and the alien ships? And more importantly, did you see the end of the world at the end of the disc?
So the Earth is flat. I'm going to confirm that right now. But Antarctica is... Hey, dude, very few people get to go out there humbled by that.
Well, there's all these conspiracy theories about Antarctica. And the hilarious part is when you know, and they're like, oh, they were hiding this. When you skydive in, you see everything.
We probably saw more coming in. Iceland Air runs a rotator. And you run on what they call a blue ice runway, which was really cool. So everything just about the experience was top notch. But we had to wait for the rotator to come back. So we had a time when we jumped within an hour and a half, because time's a factor here, before the rotator landed. The weather was in our favor. We jumped. It was an awesome jump. You can see Mount Vincent. The camp was cool as hell, run by a guy named Mike McDowell, Australian, probably the most interesting man on earth. And then the camp is full of millionaires and billionaires. And so...
Well, they go to Antarctica just to hang out?
To go climb Vincent, to go to the South Pole, to do whatever they, you know, fits their fancy. They run a number of excursions. And it was a really eclectic and cool group of people.
Do you know who owns Antarctica? Does anybody own it?
No. But there's a number of treaties. They do safeguard the environment. Like when you step off the plane, you have to step into like this tray of solution that kills any germs on the bottom of your shoes. They're very, very disciplined about, you know, picking up the trash, making sure where you defecate or piss.
I can't imagine people just fucking willy-nilly littering all over Antarctica.
No. And I mean, dude, you had the Chilean military that was like a camp away. They've got underground bunkers. I'm sure some interesting programs are run out of Antarctica, but the staff was absolutely cool. So we went to Chile and jumped outside of Santiago, which is really a beautiful jump. Chile, like the part of San Diego we jumped in, reminds me just of Northern California, almost like Napa area. So that was a beautiful jump. From there, we took a red eye to Miami. And remember, we've been planning this thing for 18 months. When we land, everyone turns on their phones, and it's like the text messages from American Airlines start popping up. And the first time since 9/11, the week we're doing this, the NOTAM system goes down. And for the listeners, if you don't know what the NOTAM system is, it's like notice to airmen and mariners. It's what regulates air traffic control. So all flights are canceled. And I'm like, of all the things, of all the contingencies we planned for, this was not one of them. So we knock out our jump in Miami because we have to hit North America.
Sure.
And then we got the guys together and said, hey, here's the obstacle. This is going to push us off schedule. We may not do this in 7 days. Now it'll be realistically 10 to 14 days. And remember, we're flying commercial because we didn't have enough money to charter a private jet. So it was our lone Canadian, who's a JTF-2 operator, former, which is our version of like Delta Force in Canada. Good dude. He's like, hey, let's get a private jet. And everyone's like checking their bank account. And they're like, yeah, bro, that's not going to happen. And the guys got on the phone. We found some good Americans that are like, we love what you guys are doing. We're going to get you a private jet. So we wanted to control the optics on this. We got a G5 from Miami to Spain. Here's the funny thing, since I'm sort of the quasi leader of this thing, since it was my idea to put it all together with the help of the guys I mentioned, I let everyone take a seat, and we had one 73-year-old like Marine private equity guy who was tandeming in with Nick Kush. We want to make sure he has one of those swivel.
Was he paying for the jet?
Oh, no, he was not paying for the jet. He did put in a little bit. So everyone gets a seat, and there's a guy named Boots, who is a retired SEAL as well. He and I end up on the couch, and the couch is like a perfect 90 degrees. And it's again going to be a night flight. We're landing in Barcelona at like 6 a.m. We're both trying to get comfortable. I see him fidgeting, and I'm like, bro, just lay it on the couch. So I get on the floor, and it was one of the coldest rides I've ever had in my life. I was miserable on the G5. Yeah. And the flight attendant would have to have me get up like every hour so she could get through. And we did jump in Spain under some pretty bad conditions because we took the plane up to 13,000. There was a cloud layer at about 1,500 feet, so you couldn't see the drop zone. And according to United States Parachute Association's, the USPA regulations in America, you couldn't drop under those conditions, but we're not in America.
Sure.
So we had GPSs, and we're like, We've looked at the pilot.
Well, you guys are also SEALs. I'm sure you've jumped into some dangerous places.
We look at the pilot who speaks very little English, and we're like, where's the drop zone? She's like, below. And I forget who, I think Mike Barker was the first guy out, boots. He's like, fuck it, jumps. And just, it was a tight little porter, which is a tight aircraft. And I was like at the very back with everyone's wave against me. And I'm like, just get out of the plane. And so each guy piles out. And the moral of that story is your mom says, if your friends jump out of an
airplane,
yes, mom, you do. So it was a cool jump. And by the time you got out of the clouds, you had about 1,000 feet to make a decision. Where am I? Can I make the drop zone? We had three guys land safely in a huge field. They identified what we call an out. They landed. Myself and a few others made it to the drop zone, landed where we're supposed to land. And then on to Egypt, which one of the coolest photographs I've ever been a part of. We hired this guy who's just a famous aerial photographer and videographer. And he got us over the pyramids in a four-way, meaning the four of us are holding on together and the pyramid is right below us.
Oh, wow.
And I'll push you that photo. And that sort of went viral. So that was probably the best jump across the board. Everyone agreed with. Antarctica was pretty cool. Went to Abu Dhabi, where it was a complete nutter clown show. You couldn't expect anything less. There was people in charge of certain things. And the guy who owned the drop zone was being a real asshole. He was a former colonel in the UAE Army or Air Force. And then from there to Australia. And we landed in Australia. We jumped with the help of our SAS brothers and Australian SAS. And we finished in 6 days, 6 hours and 6 minutes and set 4 world records. The world records mean nothing, but we jumped in honor of our fallen on each continent. Mm-hmm. And we were raising money for Folds of Honor. And so it was just good to feel that camaraderie and that brotherhood again. And ended up on Fox and Friends a few days later. And real cool experience. And I've been triaging my businesses ever since, because for 18 months, I basically had no participation in my companies. And there were some serious impacts. So I've been dealing with that in 2023 post 777 expedition of just revamping those.
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Let me introduce you to our Holistic Athlete Movement Readiness Program, also known as HAMR. Created after working extensively with Naval Special Warfare, the U.S. Army, Marines, and first responders, HAMR is battle-tested training sharpened at the highest level, delivering when it counts. If you're a warfighter, door kicker, or first responder, head to powerathletehq.com/HAMR and claim your 7-day free trial today. Now back to the show. Well, I mean, shit, dude, it's such an undertaking. You know, how are you supposed to be able to manage all these things? And it would probably take of, nothing less than 100% commitment. So
not well is the answer. How do you handle those things? Not well. So no, at the end of the day, it was worth it. It was part of something that was huge. It made a lot of noise for fundraising for Folds of Honor, which is an awesome organization. And, we just got back from Moab, which you were supposed to be on, but
I know.
You had family.
Well, we went to Costa Rica. Well, originally when you told me we weren't going to go Thanksgiving weekend, I think it was the weekend before or the week, mm-hmm. the month before. And then I think the Big Divas changed it to a Thanksgiving thing. Yeah. So,
I would have rather gone to Costa Rica with the family. It was a good time though.
What was the, what was the prepitus? Like you guys jumped out and into Moab, landed, jumped in your bitchin' ass Broncos and then just fucking kicked ass around.
So we jumped into an unknown DZ in a beautiful, valley. You've got like the high rocks. It looks like, I would assume this is what Mars is like because it's that red color. But actually the Diesel brothers, by way of Tim Kennedy, joined us and they brought their helicopters out.
Oh, nice.
So we did one jump out of a CASA, and then we did a few more jumps out of their helicopters, which was cool. Helicopter jumps are cool because when you jump out of a helicopter, it's like jumping out of a roof.
Yeah,
you've got to pick up speed before you can actually fly. And so we had fun, and then some of the guys took off and did some off-roading.
And
a lot of us went back to the lodge, which was a cool lodge. And again, just getting the boys together, honoring our fallen, feeling that camaraderie again, dude. And it's the sky's the limits. We've got a big announcement that'll come out about Legacy soon, close hold right now, but 2024 is a building year for that. And if that can become a primary job, I mean, to do like, given what we did to like just step into the business world and, trade stocks or run a manufacturing company just doesn't fill the spiritual tank. Mm-hmm. So to get to do cool things while making money, while also doing good and fundraising for Folds of Honor, bro, I couldn't think of a better life path. I've just got to make it happen.
Well, you just got to find bigger and better things. I mean, that's the only negative is like, okay, we did the, you know, 7 countries, 7 days into the jump. You did the Moab now. I mean, what's next?
So we've got one called Flight for Life, which is about to stand up. As you were part of the Drake's Fury, we had to shut that down due to lack of economic funding.
Yeah.
Sponsors just didn't have the dollars to support it. And we're shelving that. It's not dead.
Yeah. No, it's, no, I mean, that's a mission task. But just looking at the guys that did it last and their level of commitment and who they were in that, I think it's, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 years out. You would have to, I mean, that's just not something like, hey, fuck it, grab an oar, let's go.
Well, Colin Creech.
And I think as the closer we got to it, we realized like, holy shit, dude, this is
life and death.
Yeah, a little bit. This isn't like you guys skydiving where like, you know, you guys are all accomplished skydivers and it's a fun, you know, life and death, but it's like, hey, you know, we're all well equipped to be able to do this. We just have to plan the logistics, opposed from, hey, we're going to, you know, go from Chile to Antarctica in a rowboat. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
In a lot of what we do in Legacy Expeditions, there's a phrase in the special operations community that amateurs talk tactics, professionals talk logistics. Everything we do is logistics. Yeah. The tactics are easy to figure out with skydiving, do it safely. But we got guys like Boots and Andy Stumpf who are just seasoned skydivers. They know how to mitigate risk. But Colin Creech was with Brian Chontosh, Navy Cross recipient, Marine Corps, total badass. You know him.
Yeah.
He was with him last week and he's like, bro, I think I want in on this Drake's Fury. So he may be the impetus that stands it back up to pull it off 3 years from now.
He's the dude to do it. Yeah. You know, I've like one of the few people I've ever met in my life. If Brian Chontosh says he's going to do something, there's a good chance he's going to do something.
Brian's brain needs to be donated after he passes, which hopefully is 40 years from now. Yeah. But that guy's brain is just wired differently. There's just no stop. I think he would keep going until he died. Yeah. If there was some extraneous event he chose to do.
Well, the one thing I always laughed is, you know, everybody's big on David Goggins, you know, and this and you know, all the other stuff. I would, if we had money to bet in Vegas,
Brian Chontosh,
over Goggins, he'd fucking run him into the earth. He'd kill him.
The stories about that guy, one, his Navy Cross, which needs to be upgraded to a Medal of Honor.
Yeah, 100%.
I think he had the, and he doesn't care, but it was the unfortunate timing of early in the war. Had that happened
later
in like 2009, 2010, 11 time frame, it would have been an immediate Medal of Honor.
Well, back in the beginning, and you know this better than I, you had to die to get the Medal of Honor.
Yes.
And then they pretty much, like after we'd been at war and all these heroic things came out and people survived, they're like, oh, wait, maybe you don't have to die. Yeah. And like just reading, if you guys go to Wikipedia, there's a Wikipedia page about Brian Chontosh and the deal. I mean, it's like, you know, IED explosion, you know, battlefield pickups, you know, charges a machine gun nest, kills 40 people, saves everybody, carries them all on his back. I mean, it's just an amazing story.
So
it's like something out of a movie.
It's absolutely something out of the movie. And again, you look at World War II citations just like that or Vietnam citations, and it was the Medal of Honor. But Marine Corps is also known for not giving high-level awards. Like you talk to some Marines and they're like, they did this and they got like a Navy Achievement Medal with a V. Yeah. And I'm like looking at my Bronze Star citations. I'm like,
yeah,
good Lord. But what I love about Brian is that, you know, he is the most kind, empathetic, respectful individual. You know, he's got these big accolades, but he doesn't act that way. The guy is pure humility. And did you ever check out his, I think I'm trying to remember the name of some liquor company puts it on. It's a whiskey company, Talisker Challenge, where he rode from, I think, Spain
yeah.
to the Caribbean.
Like we jumped on a call and it was good to reconnect. I mean, we were pretty familiar and friendly when I was in the CrossFit scene, and then we got on the phone and reconnected, and it was like, shit, dude, there was probably 6 hours of conversation that we needed to have that we had in about 45 minutes.
No ego there, man. That's that's what I love about those type of dudes that are world class, yet just humble and treat people with respect, and they'll never tell you what they did.
He's a badass, dude.
Yeah. Well, back to Flight for Life, Colin Creech. We're going to sponsor him to go for the world record wingsuit horizontal distance record.
Oh, shit.
Which Andy held, then a Marine, I believe he was a Cobra pilot, broke. And so we're going to set up Colin, again, fundraising for Folds of Honor to give this thing an attempt. So he's going to train for 1 year. But we'll have some other expeditions in there, probably like Alaska, Jackson Hole, jumping into Yellowstone, not the actual ranch, but the general area. And so we're trying to get to a point where we can fund veterans to come. And Dan Myrick, the filmmaker, is, of course, part of Legacy Expeditions. He runs the Legacy Studios alongside a guy named Christian Kremple. We want to get veterans and tell their stories. Our story, we set the foundation. People know who we are. It'll be a regular cast of characters. But having 3 or 4 veterans on each of these that are new, and we tell their story, and they, of course, their story involves, you know, a fallen member that they're talking about and they're jumping in honor of. So it's telling the stories of the falling through the eyes of the living, and each of them have a legacy. So best intent, I don't want people to think it's just a bunch of dudes going out and having like a good time. Yeah, we are, but we're also trying
we're
to
raising fundraise. Money, but you know, like these guys, like, hey, we raised $1 million and we burned $1 million too, you know?
Yeah, and we're not using foundation money. We're using corporate sector money or our own money. Yeah. Like, I don't want to tell you how much I'm in to Legacy Expeditions, because one, my wife will listen to this and be like,
Did she listen to podcasts?
No, she doesn't listen to
anything. It's like my wife. I got 750 podcasts, been on probably 900. And my wife constantly will be like, somebody said they heard you on the podcast, never listened to one of them.
Dude, my wife won't. She won't listen to me speak. She's like, I've heard it. She's like, you're good.
And my wife's like, I've heard all these dumb stories. Idiots. Dude, that's great. I mean, anytime you can kind of wrap up something that both fills your bucket, you know, allows you to train for something, gives you purpose, and helps people, I feel like you're hitting a home run. So I'm excited to see all these happen.
Here was an interesting thing. After 777, guys were on like cloud nine, because they again, that brotherhood, you're with each other for like, we were with each other for like 25 days. We started getting texts 2 to 3 weeks after, and guys like went into depression. So we gave them the brotherhood again, the camaraderie, the homecoming, the belonging, and then we ripped it away. Yeah. And so we don't have an answer to that part yet. Of how to keep that momentum going to like, if a guy goes on Legacy Expeditions, you keep him wrapped in.
Sure.
So you don't, you know, you don't rip it away. We couldn't have foreseen that. And I even felt the depression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, dude. Well, I mean, you get to do something bitching. There's always going to be a big high and a big low, and hopefully you just have the space to be able to manage it a little bit better. So, the next adventure we have, which,
some trepidation both sides.
I've never done anything like this. So Mike and I and a few individuals got asked to be in a documentary down in Costa Rica at this place called Rhythmia, which we posted about. And it's a retreat, like this kind of the bougie, if you want to go do ayahuasca in
the Ritz-Carlton.
The Ritz-Carlton of ayahuasca. So we got asked to go on this event. I've never done anything like this. I know you've never done anything like this. It's this kind of like, you know, I'm sure, you know, we've gone on adventures and done a lot of cool shit, but now it's like this spiritual, I don't know. I would be much more comfortable jumping out of a plane, skydiving over the pyramid, than going to some retreat in Costa Rica and having some shaman take me on some adventure.
And we're going to do, I think, what they call journeys. We're going to do like 4 of them. And they increase, I think, the ayahuasca from what I'm under. So Colin Creech went to this. And
did he go to Rhythmia?
He did. Oh, and he said it was life-changing. And they've had a number of athletes, celebrities that have all gone to this. And
everybody,
everyone I've talked to
says the exact same thing. Life-changing. Like, that's exactly the word. Almost thought that maybe they do like a little preemptive programming, you know, where they're like, hey, it's life-changing. And then you wake up, you're like, it was life-changing. But like, everybody said that exact thing. George Bryan, who was on the podcast, went, he said it was life-changing. John Aguilar was also on the podcast, who's Drystone, went and did this whole deal. And he said it was life-changing. So like a lot of people I trust and like have said that this was an amazing experience, but it's still relatively unknown to me.
So one, I'm sure your background, you know, I came from a Catholic family, drug use was just sort of frowned upon. And I think we still, just the era we grew up in, you tie LSD to the dirty hippies and drug abusers. And so I think there's that stigma.
Well, it's kind of rolled up where, like, you know, cigarettes and smoking weed and, you know, shrooms and this, like, they're all kind of wrapped into this LSD, you know, the Grateful Dead. Yeah, like you said, dirty hippies, you know, Nancy Reagan, Just Say No, Dare, you know, Project Self-Esteem, you know, you don't need drugs. I mean, so there's this really, like, kind of negative connotation. Almost to the point where, like, you know, kind of a little, not embarrassed, but like, is this something I necessarily want to be talking about? And I don't know why at, you know, age 40 plus, all of a sudden I'm feeling a little like insecure about telling people that we're going to go on this ayahuasca journey. But then also, not necessarily because it's necessarily bad, but it just sounds so fucking cliche. Like, everybody here in Austin that's an entrepreneur, CEO, is going on some ayahuasca journey to somehow figure out how to get funding for his next deal. And it just feels fucking douchey to me. So I think that's
it's sort of like a Burning Man reunion.
Yes. Yeah. Like all of a sudden it's like, hey, I've been planning my outfits for 3 months to dress like fucking Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And then we're going to go to Burning Man and basically dance around in the fucking dust, you know, for 3 days and not take a shower and smell like shit.
Like, now I'll be honest. I want to jump into Burning Man and then give the middle finger to everyone and just leave right away.
Yeah.
Not my scene.
So in 2000 and we moved here in late 16, early 17, 13, 14, I got approached by a guy to build a mutant vehicle. So when you go to, maybe it was like 14, 15, somewhere in there before we left for Texas, but they have these things called mutants where you can bring a vehicle if it doesn't look like a vehicle and you have to build these crazy ass mutant things. And this guy wanted me to build a diesel powered mutant vehicle
for
Burning Man.
Did you do it?
No, he didn't. I told him, he had a sketch and I was like, dude, we can do this. The vampires were up for it. The guy never produced the money. Cause I told him, I was like, hey, here's the deal. You got to pay for everything up front. Like if it's gonna, you know, like I think we estimated somewhere between 50 and 75,000, it was probably going to go to 100. He had like, and I was like, dude, I just need the money in escrow because I'm not going to come ask you every week. And he's like, well, how about every week I come and pay? And I'm like, no.
You know, I'm learning that about business is like, you've got to pay up front. If you want my services, you got to pay up front because I'm so tired of
chasing people
to pay their bills.
Yeah.
But you'd mentioned the Grateful Dead. I just got back from Virginia where I spoke to the 27th Fighter Squadron, which is the oldest fighter squadron in the Air Force, trace their lineage back to 1917. These guys fly the F-22 Raptor, so I got to get up close. That thing is a beast. But these were the same dudes that shot the Chinese spy balloon out of the sky, and so they're showing me the videos. Great dudes, man. High in intellectual horsepower, couldn't do what they do, but they put me up in the courtyard. There was a Fish concert.
Oh, Jesus.
On the Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And I stay there Friday and Saturday. And these people, I'm in bed. People were coming back from the concert high as hell.
Yeah.
And in the hallway outside my door from like 12 to 2. And I called the front desk and said, hey, listen, I don't want to infringe on anyone's fun. But I eventually had to come in my boxers out in the hallway. And I'm like, hey, guys, if you don't get in your fucking rooms, I'm going to beat somebody's fucking ass. It's been 2 hours. I've asked twice. Like it was... Yeah. Yeah. So as we go to Rhythmia,
funny story, you know, obviously you guys know I went to Berkeley. Fish played at the amphitheater.
Yes.
And we could hear it. And all I know, they do things to melt people's minds. Like they'll play a song and then they all of a sudden flip and play the song backwards. You know, because they know all the fans are fucked up. And then the people are like, we're hearing it backwards. And they the joke that somebody, because I didn't know shit about it. And then somebody made a joke that they like will tour for like 2 or 3 years straight. And then they take a couple years off to give their fans a rest because they've basically just killed them. And so
that's loyalty.
I'm not a Fish fan, but, the people that are in that, like they are like the Dead and they travel them around and like, you know, the Deadheads and they love it. I had a cousin, my cousin Susie since passed away. She lived in a microbus and followed the Dead for like 5 years.
That's insane.
And they like these people get in their little microbuses and the Dead like go in their buses and they just caravan and go to the next one. And then they set up a little pop-up shop and sell fucking pipes and I don't know, beads and trinkets and shit. And then they go to the, and all they do is they live to go to these dead shows. And she was telling me about it. And I was like, I mean, the music's good. I listen to it, you know, Touch of Grey. I'm like, you know, like it was fine, but, like you listen to the same deal. It's, they're like, oh, it's never the same. And I'm like, oh, it's still the dead. And the people that were into it, I'm like, so I associate that Berkeley.
Yes.
Birkenstocks, fucking hairy toes, Haight Ashbury, just that dirty fucking hippie thing associated with this. And then there's this kind of like new entrepreneur, Austin CEO. I'm going to figure out what's next. So I'm going to go on an ayahuasca journey. And I think that's what Parsley went to. You know, Parsley had a, you know, experience with this.
I think he went to Jamaica or something.
Something weird.
But he said the settings were like they had no air conditioning. It was awful.
Yeah. Whereas this is supposed to be amazing. And it's in Costa Rica in January, which is a pretty nice time of year.
So plant-based medicine has been pretty, when there's a guy, Marcus Capone, that runs Vets. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing, and I did go do Ibogaine.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they said that's like ayahuasca on steroids.
And that was the first thing that you had ever done.
Ever done. And my parents were like, good on you.
What was the experience?
The Ibogaine was rough. I was what they call, because they make you fast so many hours before. I was purging the whole night into a bowl, but nothing was coming out.
Just dry heaving?
Dry heaving. It felt like I would assume wiping a hard drive is like I was shaking when I got up from that. We did do DMT later that weekend, which was an experience I can't even, I feel that's the closest you get to God, induced by drugs.
Yeah.
Suck it through a vape.
The DMT, we had,
5-MeO DMT.
Yeah.
The God molecule.
Yeah. So, I mean, the theory goes that we're living on parallel planes with different, like, you know, universes, and all of a sudden the DMT just erases that. So I'm like, I listened to Joe Rogan, and then we had that guy, Justin Lepore?
Lepre.
Oh, yeah, Justin Lepre, who has this Church of Sacrament, Church of Light deal here in Texas where they have, you know, they do psychedelics. And he talked about it, and when I kind of brought it up, he kind of eyes got real big, and I was like, all right, we'll get away from that one. But so is the Ibogaine just cleanses and then the DMT reprograms?
I couldn't speak to that. It's the protocol they have, but it's been helping a lot of special operations guys and veterans with the trauma. I mean, I think the doc who runs it, Martin Poblanco, great dude. And we actually, I think, you know, Kirk works with him heavily.
Yeah.
The sweetest guy you'll ever meet, but a lot of people use it for addiction. Mm. And I will tell you, I stopped dipping for like 3 or 4 months and then got back on the train.
Did you personally notice like a massive difference where, like, you know, you came in and your wife's like, I don't recognize you, kind of a thing?
Dude, I remember I got back and I had just smiles, and then my wife was yelling at me to
stop smiling.
To put the, you know, unload the dishwasher and help out around. And I think it was good. And I think this will be an interesting, whether you want to call it a reset or awakening for us. But I know we're sort of like-minded. We'll probably do this and then never do it again.
Yeah.
Where I see some people just like totally get on the plant-based medicine train.
Yeah.
And they start doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And my only question or initial thoughts are, okay, if you were drinking alcohol heavily, you do this and now you're doing plant-based medicine. I'm not judging, but now are you replacing one thing
for
another?
One addiction for the other.
Because some work, both mentally and spiritually, you just have to be able to do on your own and go through the hard work of.
Is like a microdose of psilocybin better than, I don't know, drinking 5 or 6 cocktails? Like, I don't know what the difference is. I do know with the psilocybin, neuroplasticity and like all the connections and all the things that happen on neurological level are pretty well established. I don't know. It all feels like disassociation to me, like an escape. Like, I can't say I don't like to sit down and have a glass of wine or have a drink. And like, you know, am I sitting down because, oh, I've had a hard day, I need to drink this? No, I don't fucking do that. But I definitely enjoy sitting down and having a drink with my friends and laughing and bullshitting. Like, I don't drink by myself. That's like the number one rule. Like, don't drink by yourself, to the point where, like, if I do crack a beer, I always give my wife, I'm like, you want a sip? And so she knows to take a sip, just because I don't drink alone. when you find yourself just fucking drinking, like I had a buddy who was like, I drink two bottles of wine. I was like, with who? By myself. I'm like, oh, Jesus, you drink wine by yourself? I would never open a bottle of wine by myself. But
I'm with you.
Is it, you know, disassociation that people are trying to run from their life or run from all the pressures, or I need a break, so now I'm going to take a little spiritual or physical vacation because I'm going to have a drink or take some of this? I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I think, this idea of, it's permeated where, and this is part of my gripe. Actually, I talked to Matt about this morning. There's this feeling as like the entrepreneur and the individual that there's like, and you see the, what is it like Ed Milet, where it's like, my first day starts at 4 a.m. and then 8 a.m. I've lived my first day, and then 8 a.m. to noon is my second day, and then noon to 4 is my third day, and then 4 to 8 p.m. is my fourth day. So every week I've had, 28 days, and I'm just grinding and living, and this is what I'm doing, and grind, and I, never take a break, and I talk to my kids for 20 minutes, and there's like this kind of like almost like, oh, these guys are so amazing. And I think, fuck, dude, like that's a shitty fucking existence.
People need to stop putting, I don't know what the right word is, these motivators, these influencers on pedestals.
Well, they do with the David Goggins, where I watch David Goggins and, what he's doing is amazing, not to fucking throw any shade at him.
He's impacting life.
But it just looks like a slow way of killing yourself. I'm like, is this dude just want to kill himself and he's just fucking finding different ways?
Dave Goggins is an interesting character. I don't know Dave. I've met him once or twice within the SEAL teams. I mean, one, you can't take it away.
Yeah.
One hell of an athlete.
Yeah. And fucking hard as fucking coffin nails.
But is there mental, spiritual stability there? That's my question. I'm not throwing shade on
self-hate
whatsoever.
I'm kind of like, I'm conflicted where, I'd like to be present and I like to be in control. Like if we're going somewhere, unless you're a good driver, I'm driving. Like there's been numerous times where I've gotten in the car and, I'm sure you've driven with people that aren't good drivers and they're distracted and doing this. And I'm all the time like, dude, I'll drive. Like I have no problem. I am fucking well-trained. I did all of the fucking race schools. I used to drive a twin turbo Porsche. Like I fucking have gone 200 miles an hour on a motorcycle without a helmet. I've done it all. And when I get behind a wheel, I am fucking locked in. It doesn't matter what it is. I'll drive the wheels off this motherfucker. And I've driven with people that are doing like 40 things and I'll be like, it's not an insult. Just let me drive. I feel way better. Now, if I get in the car and you fucking buckle up, you look at me, you're ready to go and I hit it and we're fine. I'm fine with that. But like there is a certain level of control I like to have. And this feels like handing the keys over to somebody else. And that's kind of what it was funny. I was kind of stoked. Oh, I was felt better about Parsley coming because I know that like my barometer for a lot of shit is Doc Parsley. Like, as you guys know, we've had Doc Parsley on the podcast. I've never seen him high and I've never seen him low. Mm. He's fucking even keel all the time. Like I said,
that good old boy.
I went to his wedding and I was like, Doc, you happy? He's like, yeah, I'm real happy. Can't you tell? And I was like, he was happy. And I've just never, like, Doc is fucking like, he's Cool Hand Luke to me.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, he's always been just fucking Parsley. He's consistent. Like, If I called Parsley and I was like, hey man, like something bad happened, he'd be like, oh, that sucks. I'm like, hey Parsley, we got to bury a dead body. He'd be like, oh, that sucks. I'm like there's fucking even keel Doc. And so when I knew Doc was coming and he's like, hey, he's like, I'm like, well, as long as Doc's there, I'll have a barometer for everything. And then when Doc's like, hey, I can't make it. I was like, you motherfucker.
Classic Parsley. Classic Parsley. He called me to coffee yesterday and it'd be like, and I looked at Jordan, my wife, and I'm like, he's going to pull out of Costa Rica. Now Doc has helped so many
unbelievable
freaking people.
Yeah.
And he's loyal as he can be.
Yeah. No, he's the fucking best. I mean, I tell people all the time, like on my short list, like on your phone, like Parsley's right there, like underneath the my kid. Yeah, he is because like, hey Doc, I fucked myself up. Come on over. And then like normally he'll just swing by. Like there is, yeah, he's just one of my favorite people in the world. But it was funny because, like Shanji Habero's coming with us from Six Blades. Shanji's an interesting cat. I mean, I don't know if you've...
I think he's going to cruise through this.
He's from the Amazon.
Yes.
Yeah, he's from Manaus, grew up in the Amazon, has this whole vision. He does jiu-jitsu and he's Brazilian, so therefore, like, time doesn't really exist for the Brazilians. Like, there's a general time, like, hey, if it starts at 8 a.m., that might be 7:45 or 8:30.
We've seen that
yeah.
for a podcast. Yeah, my podcast. Yeah,
and so... And Shanji says, like, oh, he's fucking Shanji. So yeah, he's like, oh yeah, it'll be fine. Everything's good. You know, he's just like, he'll be fine. So it's a funny, and what I wanted to see is I wanted to see the contrast of Parsley and Shanji, and now, fucking Parsley.
Well, we also got Mark Pattison
from
NFL, who's going to be behind the camera.
Nice.
Directing and producing with Will Sharman.
And then your boy CZ.
CZ, who just retired as the SEAC. So this is huge, that the most senior enlisted guy in the military, and he retired like 4 weeks ago.
Oh, so in the Navy or just in the military?
In the military.
Oh,
so
wow.
He was a former 2-4 STS pararescueman, which is JSOC. Total badass, total warrior. After 33 years of service, which comes with trauma, especially the amount of combat he's seen. It's going to be interesting because he's an aggressive dude to see him go through this. But well, total statesman.
Sounds like a ball buster.
He, dude, no better friend.
I love the shit talking.
No worse enemy. Well, if you piss him off,
well, that's what I've always, I think the reason I've always clicked with a lot of the NSW SEALs is because we talk a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And like, as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh, this guy likes to talk shit too. But yeah, it's going to be a funny, funny adventure. I mean, the fact that we got invited to go to Costa Rica and go to this amazing resort and do this. And I think the entrance, I mean, I look at like going on the adventure with friends. I just think that like part of the payment is we're going to have to go on their ayahuasca journey. And I'm wondering like the first night, what if nothing happens? Do you just have to keep doing it? And then by the fourth night, do you really like, I don't like to drink four nights in a row.
So this is my biggest, I think, reservation is I think something will happen on the first night. And they may look at you and be like, hey, we're going to double up your dose.
No, I hope not.
So Colin said on the last night, you take the largest dose.
So they kind of build into it.
You've gotten to that point where you drank so much with the boys, you're like, oh, I'm going to vomit.
Yeah.
And it just, that just grotesque feeling.
So I have the off switch. So like, you know, like guys can like drink and they sort of keep going and then they feel sick and throw up. I drink and like all of a sudden I just fucking turn off. And
it's like the lights are off.
No. I just fucking am like, I'm tired. And like the fucking machine powers down. So there's like, I actually think I've become allergic to alcohol. To the point where like I see everybody else having a good time and all it's doing is sucking my life force away. And then I just get to zero and like a video game, I just fucking go out.
Dude, hell, within the NFL, within, you know, special operations, we like to drink.
Yeah.
Like we like to party. And that was fun when I was younger. Now I just have no desire to go get, call for what it is, shit-faced. And I also have grown like just an allergic reaction to having to babysit others.
Oh, fuck.
Or when somebody's drunk and they're just in their ear and they're bringing up these conversations, you're like, all right, man, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And then I do the Irish car bomb.
The Irish goodbye. My favorite is I try to avoid the close talkers or like the people where they're like, I'm like, why are you screaming? My fucking ear is bleeding. And what's good is being tall, you know, it's hard for it's actually good and bad. Then people feel like they can like slide in and then they're screaming the whole time. And you're like, God damn it. The close talker got me. But I don't know. I'm excited. The one reservation I have is I think the whole thing's vegan or vegetarian.
So I think they have fish.
Okay.
But somebody said the food is phenomenal.
Okay. As long as we got fish, I'm fine to eat fish.
So we'll sneak in some ribeyes. There's a fireplace. I'll just go stick it on it. But you know, so the one thing we can't film is the actual, again, the journeys or the ceremonies.
Sure.
I'm going to sneak a camera in just to put it on you and just film.
Fuck you. Yeah.
But Colin did say you'll have people like dancing.
Yeah.
It's like you go outside, there's a fireplace. So I'll probably try to find some solitary location where I just can't be bothered and just make it personal.
So the Justin dude we had, he was saying that when they do the psilocybin, there's kind of two ways. There's when you take it, you go out into nature and you're engaging. So it's external. And then they do another one where they put the mask on. So everything is internal. So he started doing the psilocybin where he was wearing a mask. And, that seemed frightening to me because like, just like anything, if, you know, like I want to sit around and drink beers by a fire. Like I want to have drinks. Like I want to see fire. I want to be outside. I wouldn't want to like necessarily do something and then just like fucking highlight reel my life inside my brain. Like, I don't know. Is this like the next spiritual unknown? I mean, does it make you a better or worse person? I don't know. I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah. As we get older, open your doors to other methodologies.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing here. but there's certain things. My door only opens so much. Like, I've heard there's dance therapy. I'm like, I don't know if this group is going to be, Sanji probably will.
Oh,
Sanji
fucking, will. Sanji's going to be out there fucking with like a headdress, like the shaman. He's going to come to find out that the shaman is really his cousin. Next thing you know, like they're going to be carrying him around on his shoulders and he's going to be our like deity. I'm like, fucking Sanji. He is, well, the one thing I will say about Sanji is he's a great time if you can get him there.
Yeah.
Every time we've ever hung out, we've had a great time. It's just getting him there is kind of which is typical of the Brazilians. They just have what I call Brazilian time. Like we train at 2:00. I usually get there about 1:45 and warm up, and like they might show up at 1:45 or it might be 2:15. And like, I'm always like, yo motherfuckers, we start at 2:00 and they're like, oh, this. And then it's like hugs and bullshit. And I'm like, God damn it. Show the fuck up on time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not mad at you guys, but we got to just be more consistent. So I think it's going to be a good time. I'm definitely looking for the adventure. I don't know. Like when I asked Doc about it, I was like, his Doc's done, I think they said he went to Jamaica and he's like, yeah, it was all right. Yeah. And then
that's Doc.
It was fine. Yeah. And he didn't say it was life changing. And then I talked to all these other people and they were like, oh, this is the most amazing thing I did. My buddy John said it completely altered the trajectory of his entire life. And like when when I hear stuff like that, I get a little nervous because I actually dig my life. I'm not looking to alter the trajectory of my life. So then I'm like, do you come home? And next thing you know, you're like, I don't know. I just want to dance in the Amazon rainforest every day. I don't know. Or like, I don't know what to. So I'm as glad. I'm glad that you have the same reservations.
Here's my question too, is I asked him, I don't know if you're on the phone with the arrhythmia people. I'm like, so because we're also doing like a colonic. There's all these other classes and treatments that go on holistically. And I'm like, well, are people tired by the end of this week? Because if you're doing the journey at night, foregoing sleep, and then you got classes during the day, I'm like, God damn, this is like sleep deprivation. And she said, no, by the end of it, people feel completely rested.
Is there a beach?
I think we have access to one. I think you've got to take like a side-by-side or something to get there. But yeah, if there's beach time, we're going
to
hit the beach.
Yeah, I was excited to go to the beach and go body surfing.
Little John is going to be there. And that's the Yair guy, right?
You mean the rapper, Little John?
The rapper.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it okay? Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
With the pimp chalice? And
yes.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going
there might be some other high profile people, but they said Caesar
Milan?
Milan has gone a couple times. Kelly Slater's on the board.
Yeah. So Kelly Slater and,
And I've got to be honest, when we started talking to Arrhythmia, the fact that Kelly Slater's on the board and he's actually done it. And I'm like, if Kelly Slater was open to it.
He's switched on a fucking dude.
Yeah.
He's probably best pro surfer in the history of fucking surfing.
He's the GOAT.
Yeah, he is.
We've got to get him on your podcast.
It'd be great. He's good. I think for like pro surfing, I mean, you got like Laird Hamilton, Kelly Slater's won more deals, but Laird Hamilton has also surfed the craziest fucking waves on the planet. I mean, shit, dude. Like, So the other thing too is, when I was in college, I took a class on cults. But I've always been fascinated by cults.
Only Berkeley would have that class.
It was a summer class. It was a summer bridge class. So I don't remember if it counted towards credits, but I took it just because it was psychology of cult. And I've always been fascinated by cult leaders and more importantly, the people that follow cults and the type of things. And I was just actually rereading Tribes and, the idea of like, tribal leader and not to kind of confuse tribes and tribal leaders and cult leaders, but there is a fine line. And, one of the hallmarks is usually a specific diet. So like, and a lot of times vegans. So a vegetarian vegan makes you more open to suggestion. Tony Robbins figured this out pretty quick. So when you go on a Tony Robbins retreat, it's all bitching like vegan vegetable types of food because they found that people when they don't eat meat are more open to suggestion than people that do. Meat eaters tend to be a little more like, this is bullshit. Which is my joke to Greg Glassman was like, you should have made this thing a vegan cult of CrossFit. It would have been way fucking better. You picked meat. Meat eaters tend to be, a little bit more hesitant. So as one of those hallmarks of cults is specific diet. You know, like the Gracies, for example, mm-hmm. had their own Gracie diet, you know, Church of Light. I mean, Jim Jones, like there's always a diet associated, like, hey, this is how we eat. So whenever I see these kind of like vegan type things, knowing the psychology of like going from a meat eater to a vegan, like there's a definite kind of pull for that. So
well, I guess I'm not going to be an open person in life because I'm not giving up
steaks.
A steak.
No, yeah. I like that's part of my religion. You know, remember in The Mandalorian when he goes to hand over the guns and he's like, I can't, it's my religion. I'm like, eating steaks and having guns is part of my religion. Like, what's that religion look like? That's the one I'm going to start.
Yeah, I did embrace the carnivore diet just out of...
Well, I've embraced the carnivore omnivore diet where I eat meat and other things, but I don't eat processed things. So I just kind of went into like one ingredient, which is what I've been recommending for you for years. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to meet the people.
Yeah.
I want to hear about the story. You know, I'm like, you kind of can imagine, and you know, we've done podcasts together many times. I'm fascinated in origin stories.
Yes.
I want to know what spurred them to build it. You know, what kind of like brought them together that felt that they needed to create this kind of high level experience. Because I kind of always imagined, at least when I was doing research on it, there's like a suffering part of this where people go to Peru and they're in a fucking hut and there's flies and this, and like there's this kind of like suffering piece of it. Whereas this is taken, like we said, a Ritz-Carlton approach. So I'm pretty excited to be able to go.
Aubrey Marcus has put a few of these videos on YouTube about where they went to Peru or Costa Rica or wherever it was. And I it seems like that's a steady part, plant-based medicine. It's a steady part of that group.
Yeah.
But I was watching one the other day with Colin Creech, cause we were in Florida, Scott Evan. Some people, it becomes a way of life. I couldn't imagine fitting plant-based medicine in to the schedules we have. It doesn't fit.
Well, the other one, and I was, I didn't broach this with Justin. We had him on the podcast recently. Is there a point where you are just too connected into it? Like, you know, you just kind of live your life on microdoses and this, and I don't know. Is there a changing in the energy piece? I don't know. I just don't know enough about it. I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts. Having Dan Engel on the Everyday Warrior podcast was really what I kind of almost spurred me. And like, you know, before we had Dan Engel, I probably would have been like, nah, that's not for me. But when we had him on and I dug deep into like what he was doing and like, you know, just some of the stories, like, I don't know how you could ignore it.
And literally watched this Aubrey Marcus documentary 2 days ago. And Dan Engel was in the documentary. I'm like, oh my God, we had that guy in the Everyday Warrior podcast. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm going to do this open book, open door. And it probably will be a solo experience for me, and it'll probably be a solo experience for you. But if it helps vets, if it helps NFL athletes or any pro athlete who's dealing with the separation of losing their tribe, I'm all for it, dude.
Is it about a spiritual reconnection into your group? I'm looking at it more in terms of, and I know this is fucking weird, but like a human performance aspect.
Yes.
Like, one of the things that we've talked about is this crystallization and all of a sudden, like, you know, the freezing of like, the neurons in your brain. And now all of a sudden, once you're crystallized, you're stuck. And, you know, this neuroplasticity piece being so fundamental towards anti-aging and learning new things and taking on new tasks. And you don't want to be like a 50-year-old curmudgeon who's like, I can't do these things. Like that mental gymnastics and that flexibility and mobility of like, you know, your ability to be able to take on new ideas and learn new things and be able to progress so that you can stay relatively young through a lifetime. That's the thing I'm kind of fascinated by. And there is a definite shattering of, just whatever's going on in the brain. I mean, they have found that people absorb ideas faster, learn new information, and there's a, you know, increase in neuroplasticity associated with some of these psychedelics. Yes. So I'm looking at it from like almost this like neurological performance standard. So, in 2013, a bunch of SEALs were coming up to Newport Beach because they were in a DOD study where they were analyzing, they were doing EEG scans on the SEALs, trying to see if there was a specific brain type for the SEALs. So they, when they went to selection, they could just pre-scan and be like, all the guys that are SEALs have this one brain size or like brain map.
Small.
So, yeah.
Yes. Small brain.
So, they actually call it operator brain. So it like kind of peaks and there's like a little thing. It's also called CEO brain. So all of the high level tier one kind of door kickers, guys that were legit, all had this one profile. So what they wanted to do is see what this looked like. And then when they went to selection, pre-scanned. So they're like, hey, these are the guys that should make it. You might want to get rid of these other fucking
guys. That's interesting.
So the SEALs, a bunch of the guys were coming up. So about the third time those guys were coming up, they'd always hit me up and we'd go out drinking the night before, shocker. They were like, hey, you want to come? So I went and I met the doctor and he's like, oh, we're also pitching Major League Sports. Do you want to be in our study? So they scanned me and the part of my brain that was damaged through the Amen study, yes, figured this out, was over here on the left. Mm. They did all the scans. Earlier this year, Nick Hardwick, who's former NFL player, was on the podcast. He came to town for South By and he's like, hey, I'm on this panel talking about brain health. You want to come? Sure. Part of my deal is NFL players tend to be flaky as fuck. If you ask me to do something, I'll show up. So I show up and I listen. Is the guy, the doctor's going through it all. I'm like, fuck, dude, this is super, not only fascinating, but it's familiar. So I go talk to the doc. I'm like, hey, I did this thing about 10 years ago that sounds very similar to what you guys are doing. Come to find out that was the Brain Research Center. And when I mentioned it, the guy's like, we're the Brain Research Center. Dr. Jin, who the guy that you worked with, has since moved on. And then I met the new doc. So they scanned me the next day. And in the 10 years, not only did the brain damage go away, my brain actually de-aged, became sharper, and went higher. So I found a way to make myself more efficient, smarter, and younger. So now I have that scan, and I'm kind of curious now. They want to rescan me because they sent me this kind of magnet helmet to test. But I'm also interested to try this and then get a rescan and see if it improved or kind of like what it did on terms of my scan. So just kind of like being able to, and then also what if it makes you more connected, makes you a better father, better husband? That's got
to
be.
Again, human performance.
Yeah.
Everything for me comes down to human performance. How can I get the most? How can I be the best version of myself? How can I go longer, harder? But you talk to guys who are renowned in the study of the brain, they'll tell you we've only begun to scratch the surface. And I know NSW was doing stuff like that, and that's great to scan somebody's brain and say, hey, he's most likely a candidate that's going to make it through the training. But it's almost like a personality test too.
Yeah.
It's one data point. Now the guy just has to prove it. He's got to put it into action.
What they found was that this specific brain type, you're going to love this, allows people to be slightly more reckless, but also be able to make decisions faster under stressful situations. So what they found was, and they had tested guys that were, not only tier one, but they had tested guys within buds that hadn't made it through. And so they had this like pretty conclusive, and he's like, we're pretty conclusive. We can scan a guy. Like he goes, but before I sat down, he's like, I can tell you what your brain's going to look like. He's like, I don't know the speeds and all that, but I can get a pretty good deal. We sat down and he's like, it's exactly as I know. And then he showed me all the guys and he was like, there was one dude, bunch of the guys had all multiple deployments, were all, very high level SEALs. And he goes, and we brought other guys that were just did one or two deployments and rolled out. And we've done guys that didn't make it through buds. And so they had a huge cross section.
That's insane.
But he said the guys, and he goes, the same in professional sports. They had two brothers. One played like 10 years, 15 years in Major League Baseball, was a, tier one, shortstop. His brother, they scanned him. His brain looked like that. They scanned the brother. It did not. And the brother never made it out of AAA. So they had, and then what was wild is, I don't think my brothers got scanned, but he asked if my dad would come in and get scanned. And my dad's brain was not similar to what was unsimilar to mine. And he was like, I was trying to get my brothers to come. I don't think it ever worked out, but he's like, it'd be interesting to see where they started doing brothers. They started doing family and they realized across, three or four brothers or parents of this, like one kid had it and he was the one that went on and was successful in professional sports. So it was, I don't know if the DOD ever picked it up. It was probably too good a program, which in the military, if something makes too much sense or good,
it's out.
It's kind of like our Hammer program we put on for the 18th Airborne Corps. It would have saved hundreds of millions of dollars and it would have done all of these things. And they were like, the only problem with this is this would work too well. So we have to get rid of it.
That's government, dude. And as we step into first off, I'm glad we're doing this January 6th to 13th.
Yeah.
And people can come join. I know that's a short notice, but
yeah, we're going to get this out before.
Yeah. In the code, you can save $750. EDW750 is the code. The fact that we're doing it at the beginning of the year, I think is a good reset, and we'll see we'll have podcasts afterwards to talk about.
I'm excited.
The impacts.
And then not only here, we'll do a reboot, but also I know hopefully we get to Stand Back Up, The Everyday Warrior. It was fun to come in and chop it up with you guys. And also just it's nice to be on, I do the podcast solo and we'll have people come in, which is always great. But it's fun to sit there and bust the balls and joke and have a good time and sit around with the guys.
January 1, we are Standing Up, The Everyday Warrior Nation by John Wellborn and Mike Cirelli, Men's Journal. The deal with Men's Journal has changed a little for the better. It's just our platform. We are going to ramp things up, and I know you and I are in the works with that, and we've got 15 days to plan, but it's going to be a fun year. I enjoy doing this, even if it doesn't make that much money. Yeah. Again, it fills my cup, having conversations with dudes that are like-minded, but still open to other perspectives, experiences, and you learn. You learn something, and it's that one nugget I may take from you, and I'm like, I'm going to implement that in my life. And that's I don't want to say it's the power of what we do. It's the benefit of what we do. And if we do it for the listeners and they get one thing from each podcast, then that's a victory, man.
Cool. If you want more information, it's rythmia.com, and the code was
EDW.
EDW.
750. All 750. One word.
So you can get some bucks off if you want to come hang out with us, see some weird shit, and hopefully have a fun adventure. And if people want to get a hold of you,
find me at MikeSorelli.com or the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior. And that's where you can find me best. And we've got some good content that's going to come out in 2024, starting with Rythmia.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get that documentary on USA Today and probably some other streaming platforms. And what's interesting is CZ, if he's a believer in it post-trip, he's going to carry it to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to push them. Not like DOD is going to implement it for active duty soldiers, but for the vets that get out. And hopefully Rythmia stands up a program where maybe they can fund two veterans to go through each, I don't know if they call it class, cohort, weeks, whatever, so that we're actually pushing or passing on the baton to help guys reintegrate back into society and to put that post-traumatic stress, that trauma down.
Awesome, dude. Look forward to it. Awesome. Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks for tuning in. Another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.